are going to talk today about connecting with your internal and external stakeholders, i.e. the folks internally inside your company that need to help you with the digital transformation you're trying to do, as well as the folks outside of your company, your customers, your prospects, the folks you're working with. I'm joined here with really an all-star set of participants here today, panelists to today's podcast. We have Jason Venazzi, who is the global director at Braskem. Welcome, Jason. So happy to have you here. And we also, have Andy Wagner, who is the executive director at Access Digital. Welcome, Andy.
Thanks. Great to be here.
All right. I want to jump right in. However, before we jump into today's discussion, I'd love to give you two the opportunity to just briefly introduce yourself, your background, and tell us a little bit about why you're passionate about our topic today. So I'll start with you, Jason, and then we'll head over to you, Andy.
Sure. Thanks, Jari. So Jason Vagnozzi, I work for Braskem. For those of you who don't know, it's a large commodity plastics producer, global headquarters in Brazil, commercial headquarters for North America based in Philadelphia. So that's where I work out of. Been with the company the past 20 years. Most of my background is in procurement, supply chain, and business development. And the company recognized that digital innovation was a core part of our strategy about 4 years ago. And so I joined a digital transformation team at all the different areas of our company and figuring out how we can use technology to drive efficiency, both for us internally as well as for our clients externally. So I'm kind of, my whole career, I've been a change agent, disruptor. I've never been happy with the way things are done. So this was the perfect role for me. All right, Andy, you're up.
Fantastic. Thanks, Jason. So as Jari mentioned, I'm an executive director at Access Digital. For those who don't know Access, we are a digital commerce agency, and we really try to act as a commerce business partner for our customers, which simply means we start by helping our customers tackle those decisions that are really going to matter for their business and the customers. And then we look at what's the right technology to use to make that program successful. In a nutshell, that's what we do. I personally have spent the last 24 years delivering digital commerce and customer experience programs while living in Sweden, Italy, India, UK, and now back in the US, where through Access Digital, we've had the pleasure of working with Jason and the Braskem team from the beginning of their journey. So it's really great to be here for the conversation.
Very good. Very good. Thank you to you both. Before we jump into questions, I just want to briefly mention a housekeeping item or two. We are live streaming this on LinkedIn. You're welcome to ask questions. If you're watching through LinkedIn, you're welcome to ask questions in the comments, and I'll make sure they get back to me. And then if you're on the Zoom here today, you're welcome to ask questions just live or in the chat. So feel free to jump in into the conversation and share with us here. We'll pause for questions that have been aggregated at the end here. Now let's just jump in. Jason, I'd love to, you know, a big reason we wanted to bring you in is to talk about your project currently. So we'd love to hear a little bit about your business, a little bit about the challenges you were experiencing that led to the idea of building a digital portal for your B2B customers. Share that with us if you would mind.
Sure. Yeah. So when I joined the digital transformation team, one of the core projects that I worked on was how do we transform the client experience for our customers at Braskem? And, you know, the chemicals industry is not known for innovation. We kind of joke internally, the last real innovation that happened was probably email for the way we do sales to market, right?
Yikes.
Yeah, it's scary, right, when you think about it. One of our first pitches, we were like, we use the argument that, don't you think it's crazy that, you know, we'll sell a rail car of polymer for $200,000 and we can't really tell you where it is, when it's going to arrive, or how it's going to get there, but you can order a pizza for $5 and you know who's making it, when it's going in the oven, and then, you know, it's going to show up pretty on the nose of when they tell you it's going to show up. And you're like, something is off here. And you know, we recognize that. And so we really took a look at what we were doing and tried to fix what was going on. And so Oral Commerce was obviously a great solution for us, because, you know, we looked at a lot of out-of-the-box solutions, and a lot of the out-of-box solutions are made for selling widgets, right? If it ships in a box and it goes UPS, you can use an out-of-the-box solution. When you have a business like agricultural, like chemicals, like oil and gas, man, some of those solutions, they don't fit the user experience. And so we need something that was a little more flexible, a little more customizable. And so that's, we looked at solutions such as Oro and went that direction. But, you know, that was the challenge. How do you bring that experience, that Domino's pizza experience, to the chemicals industry? And that's really where we started.
I love that North Star. And you and I have talked about this before, Jason, that idea that the B2C world, the direct to consumer world, has done so much innovation when it comes to customer experience and customer communication. And the further back in the supply chain you get, a lot of times the worse the customer experience is. And so, you know, really bringing that forward becomes such a sustainable place of competitive advantage. And certainly the stories that you're telling, and the analogs that you're making into the B2C space are so relevant for people who are really the innovators and the pioneers in the B2B commerce space. So I love that analogy. Andy, I want to turn to you. And you have a more broad view. You've certainly worked with the Braskem team, but you also have, you're also working with a lot of other companies and seeing what's happening in the industry. What are you seeing when it comes to more and more companies, sort of traditionally offline companies, going online? And are there some interesting examples that you could share with us?
Yeah, I think, you know, we all sort of knew that the B2B industry, if you will, as a whole, was lagging behind. They were never really forced to tackle the digital commerce question. They didn't need to. Everything was working great. But then we had the COVID-19 pandemic, and when that hit, you know, that caused, you know, companies in the manufacturing, distribution, any business really where the bulk of their revenue was generated by a direct sales team, they had to confront their digital future sooner than perhaps they were ready to. One of the trends that we've seen come out of that digital scramble is actually on the B2B buyer side, so their customer side, where there's a growing preference to purchase online. In fact, I saw earlier this year a Gartner survey where they found 80% of B2B buyers now have, you know, formal goals to increase purchasing through the digital commerce channel. So you know, what this is doing is, you know, pushing these traditionally offline B2B companies to sort of come to terms with the reality that, you know, digital has become the context for business, you know, not just a channel, not just a way to conduct it. I think by far, Jason and Braskem it's the best story we have. I mean, I can remember the day we found that our developers understood that we have to figure out how to track rail cars, right? That's something that you don't see every day. But the big shift, the big things we're tackling are how do we transform our traditionally offline business? What does that mean, our processes? And it's being pushed from the customer side. So understanding how to better serve our customers is everybody's challenge in the space.
Yeah, it really is about customer experience. And I really like that concept of digitization as a part of customer experience, not just a channel for purchase, because there is so much data and research coming out that even in the B2B space, 80, 90% plus of searches for products and services in the B2B space still start online, start on Google. And so if you're not there, if you haven't digitized that experience, if you haven't created content for that customer experience, you're really falling behind. so I really appreciate that perspective. I want to go back, Jason, to your project. I'm so impressed with the story that you created. You're a global director in a close to $6 billion market cap company. How do you get such a huge project off the ground? Where do you start? And, how do you lead change in that type of organization? Because I know a lot of folks listening in are in your similar situation. They're one person leading change in a big company, and they're sort of, they're curious how they start and lead change. Anyway, I've said too much already. Jump in here.
No, Jar, you're right. It's not easy. Especially the first one through the door, you got to get whacked in the face a couple times. You got to have thick skin for sure.
Maybe we'll just turn the rest of the podcast into a therapy session about how hard it is. Because I think you're absolutely right. It's challenging. Sorry, I cut you off. Go ahead.
No, and I'm sure half the people on this call are trying to do the same thing. And, I tell my team, you're going to hear no a lot. Get ready for it. Just right up front, knowing what they do, how they do it, and they're only focused really on their job. It's really tough for them to see the bigger picture of how these tools work together, right? So it's just tough finding the right people to lead these projects with you that are disruptors and innovators within the company. And I can tell you, this wasn't Brascom's first attempt at something like this, and we've failed in the past. And one of the things that Andy mentioned and you mentioned was these things need to be driven from the client expectation. Mm-hmm. All too often, we drive them from internal efficiencies. We look at a program like this and we try to justify it on an ROI basis based on, well, how much time will my customer service team save? How much time will my supply chain save? And we forget to ask, well, what does the client need? Because there's really not a good ROI calculation for that. You do it because the industry and the world around us is changing. And if you don't do it, it's, you might not be around to see what that looks like, right? So that was just one of the first mentality shifts is, hey, we're going to design this project. We're going to take a team separate from the business because the business people have way too much to worry about. They're running the business. So we need a separate project team. And we're going to start the design phase from the client's perspective. So we interviewed 60 clients and only 10 internal stakeholders. Because look, we know what all the challenges internally are, but we don't understand what the challenges to the client are. And our whole design phase was based on the client feedback, not the internal stakeholders feedback, which is, it was like a mind-blowing experience. People were really frustrated with, why aren't you talking to me? And why can't, because internal supply chain customer service tended to want to just push work to the customer. Hey, I don't like doing this anymore. Can you make the client do it? Right. And you're like, I'm not sure that's going to get the right customer engagement. So some of those early decisions really need to be fleshed out and thought about.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say this because I do think there's a lot of the ROI calculators and a lot of the calculations that folks do. It is around things like, how do we reduce customer service, time? What does self-serve do for, our sales organization and how much more efficiency can they gain? And I think, all of those things are sort of like externalities and the benefits. Yet, to your point, I think the North Star, it seems like the most successful digital transformations really have the customer as the North Star in terms of their experience and how they want to interact with the brand, and how they want to purchase and how they want to go through that whole customer journey.
Jory, the only thing I'll add.
If
you start the other way, what we found is if you start with those ROI calculations, you end up with incremental change in your organization, right? You do a few things, but you don't really lead to disruptive change. And so you really got to ask yourself as a company, are we really trying to change the way we do business, or are we just trying to make incremental changes? Because most of us know how to make incremental changes. We don't know how to really change the way we do business. And that was the goal of our platform launch.
I mean, I think we could actually end the podcast on that comment, and it would be well worth our time. I actually, that is such a insightful comment, because I agree with you. It is not about incremental efficiency, especially for projects of this magnitude. And when you're doing so much change management internally, both with your internal stakeholders as well as your external stakeholders, hopefully for the better. For the better. Yeah,
I'll tell one more story, Jari. I'm sorry to get.
All right. Yeah, please. No, come on. But, this is great.
But you got me rolling now, so I'm going to keep going. And Andy knows this already, because this was really something unique we did with this project launch, which we're doing more often now. These digital transformation programs are being led by people from the business. Historically, when Braskem would look at these things, it would be an IT-led program. IT would go and scope the solutions. They would present it to the business leaders. The business leaders would select the solution, and the IT team would, you know, they would gather requirements from supply chain, customer service. They would go off on their own, and they would build this thing over the course of 8 months, and they would come out of their hole and they'd present it, and it's either good or it's not. Our project was led by the business. So platform selection, interviews with the customer, and IT was a support function to the project, which is something that companies our size don't typically approach that way. That was another revelation for us, that it really, that makes a difference overall in the product that you launched, because it's more about the user experience than the functionality.
Well, getting closer to the customer probably made that the idea of transformational change versus incremental change much easier to visualize and see. Sorry, Andy, I cut you off. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to add that I can't state strongly enough just how brave that approach was that Jason and the team pulled off. It's the right way to go about it. And what they did, it was more than just the business leading it, which is absolutely the right thing to do. But what happened there was the business didn't simply replace IT in terms of coming up with the requirements. Okay. The business listened to the customers. The customers defined the requirements. Okay. So we had a very rapid prototyping, iterative process whereby the customer was actually the real true client saying, this is what I want, this is what I want, this is what I want. And that, I think, is what it was an amazing experience. It took a little time to put the guardrails around it. but once we got there, it was an extremely valuable process that allowed us to, you know, really quickly get to results that the customers were happy to onboard and say, yes, finally, let's do this. You know, so but it was a very, very brave initiative to try and do it like that.
Yeah. And I view it as what I viewed Jason as saying is not actually diminishing the role of IT in a project like this, because they're such critical stakeholders. It's about elevating the role of the customer in this process, and really putting forward into what the customer needs and wants in a project like this, which is absolutely right.
Absolutely. And I mean, I was, you know, I don't think neither Jason nor myself are diminishing the role of IT or other
stakeholders. No, I don't think you are either.
But here's the difference. They were absolutely critical in the how, but we looked to the customers to define the what. Okay. And I think that is what made the difference.
That's a really well stated point. I appreciate that distinction. I don't even need to add to that. I want to talk about that what and how you actually pulled the what out of the customer, because I think actually there is this process as you're going through and defining requirements and defining the scope of the project, where you really want to get alignment between what the customers need and want and what your project really looks like. And I'd love to ask both of you as to how you did that in this specific case, because I do think a lot of teams really struggle to get those requirements or those ideas and needs out of their and wants out of their customers. Either one of you can jump in.
Jason, you go first. You guys led that whole process. So
I think we went with more of an iterative, agile approach to trying to get those requirements from the customer. Like I said, we went in it with an internal brainstorm and generated some hypotheses about, you know, what the key customer pain points were. So basically we mapped on a giant whiteboard with a whole bunch of post-it notes, what's the customer journey look like today? And we did an internal brainstorm as a project team. So what do we think it needs to look like tomorrow? And in that, we developed some hypotheses about, you know, where the key pain points were. So then we basically had this list of questions to confirm our suspicions and get information about where the pain points were. And so then we interviewed those 60 customers. And, you know, we identified different personas within our client base, right? You kind of divide it up and you're like, I got my large strategic clients, you know, the top 20 clients or 80% of my sales revenue. It's probably a pretty common theme. They're really important. But then we have the tail, and the tail probably don't get as much direct attention, and they probably have a different set of pain points. And so we interviewed clients from each portion of our portfolio, asked them the same script of questions, and then analyzed the results. And I think very quickly you saw about 10 or so themes start to bubble up about, you know, I need to access information, I need to do it quicker. I don't like customer portals because other suppliers have them. Here's why I don't like them, right? Because I think there's also this stigma about bad customer portals and bad marketplaces that really prevent people from engaging. And so then we took that feedback and we started to develop wireframes, right? We still didn't build anything. We just built really simple clickable wireframes. And then we went back to those same customers and said, this is what we thought we heard from you. Can you give us additional feedback from this? And we actually had them click through it and experience it before we build it. So, you know, and this was 6 months of the project, 3 months mapping, 3 months interviewing it, and then 3 months doing these wireframes. So we haven't even built anything. We're 6 months into the project, but all that upfront work really accelerated the build process and our ability to launch the program. And we got some really cool feedback through the way. You know, I think I told you early on, as we're testing the wireframes, we thought we were doing really good. We have a lot of engineers on the team, right? So we're very detail oriented and trying to
get
the platform. And we put these wireframes, which are essentially just a clickable thing with nothing behind it. And we're testing it with a customer. His name was Earl. I still remember the conversation. And a real big personality. And he goes, guys, after we're demoing this to him, he's like, guys, I gotta stop you. I gotta hold you up. He's like, I'm not gonna use this thing. It's way too complex. He's like, let me tell you something. If it's more than two clicks away, I ain't using it. So we can just stop right now. You go think about that and you come back and show me something in a couple of weeks. And we're like, whoa. And so we went back, we shared that with the design team. And we ended up, that was the mantra for the project for the next 4 weeks. We wrote, if it's more than two clicks away on the project board, I ain't using it. And that drove everything we did. And it was just such a simple comment that the fact that we listened to it and we drove our design decisions from that really, I think, made our project that much more successful.
I love that. I love that. I love that Earl story. So did he like it in the end? That's the real question. When you brought it back to him and showed it.
He did. And he was one of those purchasing managers that the sales team warned you about. He says, look, you'll never get Earl to use this. It's been in this 30 plus years. He's seen every portal thrown at him. He'll never use it. And he was one of our first 10 customers to use it, which was really a testament to the feedback that we got from him and the team listening. Yeah.
That's great. Anything to add on that, Andy? Any other thoughts that you'd share?
That as I've expressed before, that was just such an amazing way to start the process, to make sure you're getting started on the right foot. And what we really appreciated, and able to do what we needed to do to support Braskem, was that sort of process continued. So once we had, version 0.1 up and we had customers on it, we didn't just sit back and go, good job. We kept going and we kept engaging with the customers. And at that point, we were able to get involved in some of these conversations and they were just incredibly useful to understand not only what needed to be done, but why, the context of it all, right? So that we could then help make better decisions in terms of, well, how do we connect this and use the technology in the right way and all that kind of stuff. And it just became this kind of customer Braskem us team that just sort of just rolled and iterated, really an incredible process. And it made sure, as we've said now, it helped us bring on new customers because when Jason and the team would reach out, we got the next group, there would be a couple of things that, well, if it only did this, then we would consider it. Okay. Perhaps not quite as animated as Earl, but nonetheless, being very vocal about, hey, this, and so we take that very seriously. And that's how we were still doing it. We're still working like that. So it was incredible.
Yeah. Very good. Thank you. We have time for just a couple more questions. I'd love to just understand, fast forward to project launch, how did people react to the change? What was the reaction from the sales folks or even potentially folks that may have felt threatened in the project, as well as more importantly, what's been the reaction of your customers and how's that reception been?
Yeah, it's funny. The exact opposite of what we expected to happen happened, where we expected the change management fight or the change management challenge to be with the clients. Because of the process we use, the clients engaged quicker than our internal stakeholders. Really quick adoption externally, because the platform was so based on a easy to use user experience and the features that we launched were all the features they were asking for. So they loved it. The internal change was much harder. It was, as the teams you would expect, it was supply chain, customer service, and sales. It was challenging for them. And for a few reasons. I mean, the immediate emotional reaction to a platform like this is, people worried about their jobs. That was number one. People, hey, is this going to replace me? And you have to be really sensitive to those things. And, our messaging was absolutely not. So instead of doing some of the day-to-day data entry work, your job's just going to evolve to help you evolve in your career, right? So you'll go from more of a data entry position to an inside sales position. So we wanted to upgrade, elevate, and evolve the roles to give them more different responsibilities because we've taken some of the transactional work out of their day-to-day stuff. So I think that was one of the key messages that really need to be delivered from all levels of the management, not just from the project team, but from all the way up to our CEO. We had him meet and talk about digital transformation because this is just one of several projects that was happening across the company. But it's a little different message when your manager says it versus the CEO of the company says, hey, we're not laying anyone off because of these tools. We're hoping to evolve the company so we can service their clients better and increase our sales. And so that was really important messaging internally.
I love those three words that you used as you went through the change with internal stakeholders. We want to upgrade, elevate, and evolve your roles. Like, what aspiration for internal folks who are doing a lot of mundane tasks that they just don't need to do, that their roles can be upgraded, they can be elevated, they can be evolved. I really, really like that. That's good advice for anybody going through that change to really message to internal stakeholders. And it's true. It is just true. I've never seen anyone go through digital transformation of this kind and think, you know, we can't wait to just let people go in this change. It's so much more about what you're talking about, which is how do we really elevate people and allow them to skate to the puck of where their customers really want them to be, versus just, you know, reacting to, you know, customer requests that they could find on their own. I like that. We have one last question that I have for both of you. I want you to get your crystal balls out. We have a current situation in the world. You know, there's so much, there's a little bit of heaviness right now. There's some heaviness with supply chain issues, inflation, fears of recession. What's the future of digitization, whether for Brascam or for the market generally? Are you seeing that this will require, you know, what's happening in the market will accelerate a digital change, or that it's going to slow it down? What's your perspective? I want to start with you, Jason, to give your perspective, and then Andy, I'd love for you to just zoom us out into what you're seeing across the Access customer base at large, and maybe in other companies that you're working with and talking to.
Sure.
Yeah. So I mean, the quick answer for me is I think it should accelerate your desire to invest in these tools. And the reason for that for us is because, one, we think it brings us closer to the two, we think it, in the long run, it should make us much more competitive and efficient. And three, with these tools, we should be able to scale our business and continue to grow it without the need to adding a lot more resources or overhead to the company, right? So if you build the base now and build a strong foundation of tools, you can scale and elevate those tools as your business grows without adding people. And that was our traditional approach, right? You add more capacity, you add more people. You need more sellers, you need more customer service, you need more back office support. These tools should hopefully make you a lot more competitive as you move forward into the world. So I think that's our quick view.
Love that.
So Joe, first of all, I think, my crystal ball is really only useful as a bookend in the current situation, because as you allude to, it just feels like, you know, everybody's working in this mode of, geez, what's next? You know, what's going to go wrong next? And I think what we're seeing with a lot of our customers, and just generally in the B2B space, is, you know, We've coined the phrase new normal, but we're seeing a lot of companies that are sort of forced to just operate in this constant crisis mode. And what I mean by that is that there's constant supply chain issues on that side of the house. You know, how do we get the goods? How do we get the products? How does that all work? Versus on the other side, you know, how do we manage our customers' expectations? You know, how do we, you know, get these two sides of an equation to sort of balance out? And where we've seen companies and customers really succeed is by embracing digital. And I mean digital, like with the capital D, not just digital commerce. Because this will help companies manage some of those things that need to become more agile to be able to handle this crisis, this formula that isn't balancing out. So things like replacing slower manual processes, okay? We may not be able to do it the way we've always done it, but there are other ways that are gonna give us some benefits, make us more flexible to manage the ups and downs and the, oh geez, what's next? And that's also on the customer side. So being able to communicate more quickly and directly to customers, you know, not allowing yourself to get in a position where they have to chase you. Where's my order? Where's this? What's that? You know, and digital is helping us, from messaging to even better self-service features that is pushing information out to you as a customer, right? Going kind of allowing you to go that extra mile, but not necessarily adding that internal transactional overhead to make it all happen. And I think the other area that where we're seeing our customers, you know, be successful, why they're being successful is, you know, they've started the path of having systems that can more quickly and easily onboard new suppliers or new partners. It's not a, you know, several months to a year long process to get somebody connected and integrated and all of that kind of thing. And similarly for the customer experience, being able to change, modify, add new features very, very quickly, just allows them, the company to behave in a more agile and flexible way. You're more ready to react to the next shoe that drops, if you know what I mean. And so companies that are able to do that, that really, you know, embrace that, not just again as, oh yeah, we have an e-commerce channel, but just this is how we engage with our customers. They're the ones that are, you know, surviving and thriving, actually, even with all the craziness and crisis that's going on.
Love that. Gentlemen, really appreciate your time today. Jason, thank you so much for sharing your perspective with us. Andy, really appreciate you sharing your perspective on the project and what's happening in the market overall. I'd, as always, love to thank Anna, our producer, for just organizing all of this, and the team at Oro for helping us put this on today. Thank you so much, and y'all have a great day. Appreciate everyone who joined us both on LinkedIn and out here on the Zoom. Bye, y'all. Take care.
Thanks. See ya.